You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, Chicago Cubs edition. The great Carrie Muscat off this week getting ready for spring training and filling in for her, an all-star, Lynn Casper, voice of the Cubs. Lynn, can this actually be the upcoming season, your 11th with the Cubs? Tell me that's not true.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Phil. Time does fly. I've been here now for a decade and have actually spanned a couple of eras of Cubs baseball. I was here at the end of the Dusty Baker era and then through the Lou Piniella era that included two division titles in the first 2 years. And it's been pretty slim pickings since, as you know. And I think a lot of Cub fans who have been pretty impatient over the last few years, even the fans who've been on board with the kind of long-term goals of Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer. But I think the corner was turned with the Jeff Samardzija trade to Oakland last July. And really just about everything they've done since then has been about now and the near future, not the long-term future. And I think a lot of Cub fans are very excited about what's going on, in particular this offseason.
Okay, we'll get to the Cubs soon enough, Lynn, but while we have you, we're going to do a couple of quick Lynn Casper questions, if you'll indulge us. Summa cum laude grad of Marquette. I'm wondering if there was one particular subject or course that was your kryptonite that kept you from that magna.
Yeah, I think it was the science requirement. I think I took a physics course and just did not get it. I don't know if I got like a C in that course, but I know there was some sort of science thing I had to get through, and I don't think I got through it very well.
Okay, well, we all have one of those. And your son, Leo, do you ever introduce him to anyone around the Cubs or a Cubs fan without the old manager coming up?
That's a good question. It actually hasn't come up. What usually comes up is Leo short for Leonard and is Len short for Leonard? And the answer to those questions is no. I'm actually named after Len Dawson, who was the Chiefs Super Bowl quarterback around the time I was born. And Leo is a family name, and so they're nice and short and sweet. And our goal with Leo was when he's 75, it'll still work. You know, we wanted to find a good name that'll work when he actually is Leo's age when he managed the Cubs.
Well, it's definitely a stout name. If the Cubs are in a tight race this September, could you call him Gil instead of Leo?
Yes, we'll do that for sure.
Okay, awesome. And back to the Cubs, biggest development around the team in the last few weeks, the passing of the great, the legendary Ernie Banks. And I'm wondering, in your decade, getting to know Ernie late in his life, what was your own experience with him?
Well, I got along really well with Ernie, spent a lot of time with him at the ballpark. He obviously did the seventh inning stretch a couple of times a year, and you know, pretty much every Cubs event that we attended, we ended up spending time together. I actually spoke to Ernie about 3 or 4 weeks ago. He was working on a project and had actually asked me for my help, which was very flattering. You know, essentially, my recollection is what everybody else's recollection of Ernie, and that is he was always more interested in the person he was talking to than in himself. Even on the air, when I tried to get him to talk about his career, he usually tended to talk about the people he played with or turned it around to talk about me or my partner. I think in a weird way, Phil, Ernie was way better as a player, as strange as it is to say, than people remembered, because of the fact that over the last 20, 30 years, he almost refused to talk about how good he was. And that's a rare quality in a Hall of Famer. I think most Hall of Fame players that you and I both know, while some of them are humble, you know, they don't mind talking about their playing career. But in Ernie's case, he really did try to deflect it. And a lot of the stories at the funeral service here a few days ago just matched exactly my experience with him. And I also found it interesting, you know, I don't know his family that well, but his twin sons and their amazing eulogy of their father, they talked about a lot of the same things that I experienced. And oftentimes when you have somebody bigger than life like Ernie was, you find that they're one way with the public and in the spotlight, and they're another way in private moments. And what I found was Ernie was the same guy all the time. And again, that's very rare to find someone that consistent in terms of the positivity that he brought to the table every single day.
Yeah, I think it was the second son who spoke, Jerry, who said talked about some of the favorite things Ernie said, and he said one of his favorites was Ernie saying, "How do you feel? I feel like I could fly." I thought that was perfect. I thought the Reverend Jackson's eulogy really captured him as well as I've ever heard him captured, and I love that he put it in the historical perspectives, the value of that generation of players who broke the color barrier, and pointing out that that was before Dr. King and before Rosa Parks. And, you know, what a treasure Ernie Banks has been. It'll be different for the Cubs going forward without him. When I look back at last season, it was a breakout season for Anthony Rizzo, no question. First-time All-Star, crept into MVP voting 10th. But I see a guy that looks to me like an MVP candidate in future years. Just wondering what you think about this theory. Last year he was 7th in the major leagues, not just the National League, at OPS, .913. He can hit and hit for power at a time when it's going down. But he's never driven in more than 80 runs in his career because he hasn't had, or at least last year, definitely because he didn't have the guys on base in front of him. He was tied for 42nd in RBIs, but 106th in at-bats and runners in scoring position, and he didn't really come through that well in those spots. But what do you think about Anthony Rizzo as a guy that is just about to bust as a big-time star?
Well, I agree with everything you said, and I think the biggest thing for him last year, kind of going from good to all-star good and creeping into the MVP debate, is his ability to handle left-handed pitching. Obviously, teams had put on drastic shifts against him, and I remember a couple of times in the same game, right, against the Cardinals, he laid down a bunt. And obviously, a lot of teams would rather have him do that than drive the ball out of the ballpark. But to be an elite-level hitter, you have to be able to handle all kinds of pitching. And I thought he made remarkable strides. And really, what happened against lefties is he took, I thought, a two-strike approach from pitch one. And he's such a strong guy that he doesn't have to ever really muscle up. And I saw him hit a couple of balls out of the ballpark with kind of a short, compact, two-strike swing against lefties. And I think it really helped his confidence a lot. You're right about the runners in scoring position, and that has been an issue for him. Although I think when you look at Anthony's career, he doesn't mind taking a walk in those spots. And I know that this can be a controversial topic, you know, when it comes to Joey Votto. And Votto has said all along that I'm not going to go out of, you know, my strength and out of my strike zone, even with runners in scoring position. If pitchers are going to walk me, I'll take the walk. And Anthony worked out with Votto last winter, and I think he's really patterned his offensive game after Votto. So I have no problem with that, especially if you put him in the middle of a lineup where the guys behind him can knock in runs. The one thing this team has really struggled with, and this goes back many, many decades, it's very interesting to look at the offensive history of the Chicago Cubs. Aside from 2008, they have never really been a very patient team. And Theo and Jed come in here, you know, this is the thing they espouse more than anything, is on-base skills. Rizzo brings that to the table. And I think they're trying to kind of fill the lineup with guys who do that, and that's why I like the Dexter Fowler move. And to have more guys on base in front of Anthony, I think, is really going to help him a lot. He also is a Gold Glove defensive-type player. He doesn't let the big moment get to him, and I agree with you. I don't doubt that he could win an MVP very, very soon. He's only 25 years old and should have a nice long career ahead of him.
On Rizzo, these three guys had the same number of at-bats with runners in scoring position last year as Rizzo. Rajai Davis, Billy Hamilton, and Jose Altuve. I mean, that's just astonishing to me. But anyway, spring training's coming. Obviously, anybody asks is to say they're looking forward to seeing the Cubs' young hitters, Chris Bryant, see how Javi Baez bounces back. And John Lester is going to be big, but I'll say wait until the season starts because we know who John Lester is. Outside of those things I asked, what specifically are you looking forward to seeing when the players get to Arizona and in particular when the games start?
Well, there's a lot to look forward to. You know, I'm going to start Joe Maddon. Obviously one of the best managers in baseball. I think the transition from the American League to the National League really excites him. He's already kind of thrown out a test line on the idea of maybe hitting the pitcher eighth. He's not afraid to do some different things. Aside from Fowler leading off, probably Rizzo number three or four in the lineup, I think most guys can come into spring training understanding that he's going to hit them wherever the matchups that day dictate, which I like. I think it's overrated sometimes the idea of this guy's got to hit in this spot every single day, and he's going to use his entire roster. Arizmendi Alcantara, I think the Cubs look at maybe a Ben Zobrist-type player down the road, switch hitter, can play multiple positions. As you mentioned, we'll see Chris Bryant at some point, probably you know a few weeks into the season. You've got the Baez question. Can he stick with the big league club? I just think overall, Phil, the idea of you know, the last two or three, maybe even 4 years, there were some guys who were allowed to play through their struggles because it was in a development mode, and we're past that now. So, you know, whether you're a veteran guy with a long-term contract who goes through a major slump, he's probably going to find himself on the bench more often now than in the past. And for a kid like Baez, there's no guarantee. I mean, he's going to play. He's going to play a lot. He's going to get his four or five plate appearances every day. The question for him is, will most of those come at the big league level, or will he have to make a trip back to AAA? So I think that extra pressure that's going to be on some of these kids will be interesting to watch in an environment now where the spotlight of not only Cubs fans but really all of Major League Baseball is a lot brighter. And, you know, I think that Joe Maddon has really embraced that. This job is very different than any job he could ever have, and I think he really is excited about the roller coaster ride. And I'm just excited about how he's going to handle this roster.
Yeah, all good points. And a very quiet acquisition that Tommy La Stella from the Braves, one of those on-base guys that Theo would seem to fit. So a lot of stuff to look forward to. Lynn, thank you very much for filling in for Kerry Muscat for Lynn Casper, this is Phil Rogers. This has been MLB.com Extras, Chicago Cubs edition.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, t-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.